Welcome back to Travel Bags with Anita and Friends. I'm Anita and here with Olivia, and we're talking about my trip to Philadelphia recently. And Olivia, the African-American history, as you just heard in the last segment, is just really fascinating to see how much is there and how it is also preserved as well.
Very well preserved. And this is a great, you know, indication that sometimes it is a good idea to really try to plan your travel around a theme, because it can kind of lead you in a certain direction and help you discover things that you may not have seen otherwise.
And find out those kind of little unknown things and places that are kind of little unknown places. For instance, I had a chance to visit the Johnson House Historic Site. And this is the location of the Underground Railroad Station. And it also serves as a house museum for you to get a chance to see, you know, how people lived during that period. But it's a historic house museum that represents what everyday people have done and can do to make a difference in their community and beyond. And during this time, to also help people gain freedom.
Right. That's a great message. And then it has the proof of those words, the power of those words right in front of you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I had a chance to talk with the curator there at the Johnson House. And she shares a little bit of history about the Johnson House. But I want you all to listen carefully, because I'm actually recording as we're going on the tour. So listen to the creaking of the door opening, my footsteps going up and down the stairs, and think about what that would have been like for someone enslaved, trying to find freedom and hiding out. So just think about that. Put yourself in that place as you hear also the sounds of everything that's taking place. Here's my conversation.
It was built by John Johnson Sr. for his son John Jr. on the occasion of his marriage to Rachel Livesey or Livesey Johnson. And for those of us from Philadelphia, we have a number of streets that are named after families. All right, and some are very interesting families. But that particular name is one that would let people know that's a Quaker family. Now, this was a family of white Quakers who, in the first generation, sort of lived here in a certain part of the house I'll show you in a minute. And then the second generation came in, and that's where we begin the story of the Underground Railroad. All right? Now, when the second generation lived here, this was their business office, and they had two businesses. They were tanners and they were farmers, and they owned about 300 acres of land. In this particular room, we begin the story of the Underground Railroad. And just so you know, architecturally, this used to be two separate rooms. All right? We believe that some of the Underground Railroad meetings were probably held toward the back part, you know, away from what could be some light in the day and the shutters and so forth. We believe that this woman right here is the reason that the house became an Underground Railroad house. Now, her name is Jeanette Roland Johnson, and she begins the second generation of Johnsons over here. You had John and Rachel first, then the second generation comes in, and her husband was Samuel Johnson. Now, one of the other reasons that we believe the house became an Underground Railroad house is because Jeanette was not only a Quaker woman, she was a member of a sect among the Quakers known as the Hicksites, and the Hicksites were known to be anti-slavery. Among their members was someone named John Woolman and Benjamin Lay, and these two men would go in with their top hat and their cape, and they'd jump up and down talking about slavery's wrong, and they'd pull out a dagger, and you know, the audience would, and they go, slavery's wrong. And what would appear to look like blood wasn't. It was a vegetable juice or something red, to make their point. Mm-hmm. All right, so she belonged to that. So we believe she was the nudge to have the house become an Underground Railroad house. The picture of this gentleman is critical to the story of the Underground Railroad. His name is William Still. He was absolutely the man of his time. Yeah. All right, now he was born free. Okay, he was one of the last child of his father and mother, Sidney, and I think the father's name was John. I may be a little bit off of that. But he grew up in Medford, New Jersey, received some education, then moved on to Philadelphia to get some employment. So he worked for a group called the Philadelphia Vigilance Committee, you know, as a clerk doing maintenance, and then he was listening, paying attention, and so he started moving up a little bit. And later on, he's known as the father of the Underground Railroad, really named by the New York Times, because of what he did. He became a member of the Pennsylvania Abolitionist Society, PAS they call it. And this society was anti-slavery, and he was asked at one of the last meetings, we need for you to begin to record, you know, what your experience has been. Because he had been someone that as Africans were coming through, he would sit them down, get some information, maybe in an effort to help a family member or someone else to find their way. Now, with respect to that, here we have our mat. This was, when he did this, we loved it because even for myself, I had to learn quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And he sort of stops these arrows here at Cuba and the Andros Islands, but if this could really be a larger map, you would see the Africans ran everywhere. Okay. If you are, for example, in Texas, I don't think you're going to Canada. It's too far. Mm-hmm. But you can certainly go to Mexico, all right? And you can certainly go to Central America. You certainly went to South America. And now we are uncovering all types of information that really proves that Africans ran wherever they had to run. Even though you see these arrows, this all did work for some Africans. But there's another story I want to tell. Now, when you begin to unravel some of the history, you'll see that in 1638, 39, there was the outlawing of the drum. Some of this happened to indigenous people as well, because that's communication. Because even though Africans came from different parts of the continent, there's some things that folk just do. And communicate with the drum is one, and that includes European groups as well. So you can look at that. You can look at the case of John Punch in 1640. The case of John Punch is that John Punch was an indentured servant. Many Africans coming initially were indentured servants, working maybe 3, 5, or 7 years, but here's what happened with him. He and a Scotsman and a Dutchman felt their indenture was over. So they said, we're out. So they run away, and they're caught. But here's where the difference comes in. The Scotsman and the Dutchman were given additional years on their indenture. Mm. John Punch was given enslavement for life. Mm. So when you begin to look at, let's say, some materials, one of my books that's really good, there are two. One is called In the Matter of Color, by Judge Leon Higginbotham, and the other is First City by Gary Nash. All right, you really begin to see how the legal part just changes. Which one thing? Black folks wanted two things when they run. They wanted the end of chattel slavery, and they wanted equality. Now you have to check that 13th Amendment carefully for that second part that says if you've been convicted of a crime, you can't in effect become a slave. Yeah. And if you look at the slave system, you have to read that amendment very carefully. Because it says involuntary servitude is no longer part of the United States. And then it's almost like, however, okay, if you've been convicted, duly convicted of a crime, that can happen to you. So if you get to think about enslavement, let's say after enslavement, what would happen to a lot of black folks would be they'd be looked upon as vagrants. So mm-hmm. you've got nowhere to go, well, we'll put you on chain gang. Yeah. All right? So these are, so you have to sort of keep some of this historical piece, you know, in mind as we go through it. So they had something called the gradual abolition of slavery. So you could be a woman and be enslaved for up to the age of 21, or 21 years. And if you're a man, up to 28 years. And who's keeping track of that? Well, folks did keep track. I said, I'll do some research and look at the slave trade. And there you see these other arrows, you know, just in terms of the trade itself. Okay? And then you... This one, where you're looking at the actual products. Okay, what were the commodities? Because capitalism is a question of commodity production, ownership, and wage labor. So if you think about those three things, that's what you're talking about, okay? So.
Now, that was really fascinating, of course, to hear that, right, Olivia?
I mean, it is.
Just amazing. And it's amazing how you really can kind of put yourself there. And if you think you could on that segment, when we come back, I'm going to pick up with a part two. And you can really kind of hear us as we're walking around. And she's explaining some of the areas where that door, you know, maybe someone enslaved was going through that door or going downstairs. And we really got a chance to really feel as though what that would feel like. You know, someone is behind me maybe by, you know, a couple of hours that's been chasing, you know, or trying to find me. But now here I am in this what would be a safe house. And just, am I going to be safe? So many, many things around that. So you guys sit tight. When we come back, we'll go to part two with the Johnson House. You know, Travel Bags with Anita and Friends.